This is episode 43, Storytelling About the Past. Welcome to the Mindset for Life podcast. This is Bethany, your coach from drbcoach.com, coaching with power, purpose, and practical tools to help you show up with confidence. Have you ever told a story of your past? Or maybe someone in your family told it about you? And in that story, you did something silly or odd or embarrassing? When that story is told, it is another reminder of our weakness or frailty, or maybe about our mistakes. And the brain, which likes to draw conclusions quickly to save its energy, the brain screams out that yes, we really were silly or embarrassing or made a major mistake, and we always will. This idea that our brain likes to add to the story, that it will always be this way, it's something called an automatic thought. The brain loves to feed us automatic thoughts. The interesting thing is mistakes are just things that happen on the timeline of life, but they aren't the definition of who we are. In fact, we can look over the past, the stories we have told about them, and stories that others have told about us in about past events, and we can actually change those stories and begin to see those experiences, mistakes, or life events totally afresh. In other words, we can change the past by changing the stories we tell about ourselves. There's this idea we have sort of a ladder in our minds, a level of thinking that goes through several steps to process our thoughts, and many people call this the ladder of inference. Well, when information comes into our mind or when the story it gets told about us or we tell the story, we sort through the details and we tie it to the context and the understandings and assumptions that we already have. So, for example, we might go through life thinking about the event or the story that is told about us and look for evidence to support it rather than evidence to refute it. For some reason, our brain loves this automatic path of finding evidence to support these stories so it can relax and automate other parts of our life. Some of these things in our automatic thoughts are really like habits, and I like to call those thought habits. We all have thought habits that come with us throughout life. And many of us don't know where we got these thoughts or these automatic thoughts or, like I said, thought habits. We have no idea where we got these thoughts about ourselves. I'll never forget the day I was in a coaching session when I was coaching a very talented woman. She was in a job she didn't necessarily enjoy, and her real dream was to be a writer. She said something about how she would really love to set aside time in her life for writing every day, just a little. At the same time that she had this dream, she really wasn't doing what it took to get there. Ultimately, we were able to discover what was holding her back. And one day she kind of blurted out, "I don't give myself the time to write because I don't think I would ever really be able to make a living at it or be any good at it anyway." Somewhere along the line, she had picked up an assumption that she was not a very good writer, or she had a fear that she was not a very good writer. And that's the story she was telling herself when she chose not to take the time to write every day. Now imagine the power that same lovely and talented woman would have if, when faced with self-doubt and thinking, "I'd like to spend about half an hour today writing," if she started to think, "But I'm not good at it anyway." Instead, if she flipped that and said, "And maybe I'll discover I'm really good at it." Or even, "And I'll take the time to do it every day until I am really good at it." It doesn't have to be, "I already am good at it," because maybe that isn't the case. Maybe we have skills to develop or somewhere to grow. It's a dream, but we're not quite there yet. Regardless of the status of truth in that situation, every time we have a negative story to tell about ourselves, it came from somewhere in our past. Likely, we drew a conclusion about ourselves, or someone suggested it was true about us. Whatever the reason, we adopted it and we live with it. I'll tell you one of mine that came into my thoughts sort of recently, and I reflected on how my thinking has changed about this automatic thought I used to have. When I was a child, My mother put me in tap dancing, ballet, and hula lessons for about 5 years. I don't recall what age I was. I was very young. I do recall being on the stage in different costumes and learning different dances. And I recall the experiences I had going to practices and being with the teachers. One day, my family had a family gathering at our house. Our family was 4 people, my mother, father, my sister, and me. But we had a lot of extended family in the neighborhood and in the valley. I grew up in this area where, even though people might live half hour to an hour away, we considered it very close. And every time we'd have a family gathering, everyone would come. There were very few young people in our extended family. Most of these people, their children were grown because my mother is the youngest among her siblings. So there weren't a lot of other children. I didn't have, for that reason, a lot of good examples of how do you behave when you're a child at a family party. At this particular gathering, I recall going into my room and putting on one of my ballet costumes. I was going to come out into the living room and perform for all of my relatives. Of course, my relatives had no idea I was planning to do this. Everyone was in the living room visiting and having a really nice get-together at the family party. I went into my room, I put on this ballet costume, and I came running out into the living room, announcing my performance and expecting everyone to give me their undivided attention. As I stood there trying to get this performance together, my relatives really weren't interested. They loved me, my parents loved me, everybody really cared about me, but the goal of the event was this visit, and everyone was very involved in visiting with each other. They did not want to be quiet and watch me perform a ballet dance on the spot. Who could blame them? It was quite an interruption, actually. And when I walked back down the hall to change back into my normal clothes and return to the party less excited, my first thought was, they don't appreciate me. They don't want to see me perform. And for many years, as I became a true performer and became incredibly good at playing my trumpet and other things, I often thought that my family had no interest whatsoever in seeing me perform. I was mistaken. I didn't know the truth because I was still very young when I adopted that thought. And it wasn't until much later in my adult years that I realized my relatives were trying to give me feedback and information about how to appropriately interact at a family gathering. Demanding everyone's sudden attention and performing for them without notice isn't really one of the things we do at a family gathering. Performing might be okay if we planned it and asked everybody if they were interested, but they already attended all of my performances when I was actually on the stage. They didn't need that in the living room. I was able later to change the story I told myself about that event. I was able to tell that story and be grateful that my relatives were letting me know what was appropriate at family gatherings, that they cared enough about me to really give me the feedback I needed at that time so I could learn and adjust and adapt. Then when I was with other people like friends, colleagues, coworkers, I could similarly adjust and figure out the rules of the situation, what might or might not be shared, just like we all do. In fact, these are excellent lessons to learn. They don't mean that other people don't care about us. In fact, they mean others do care about us quite a bit. That's one example of a story in my own life, that I had one story for many years, and it did hold me back, and later on, I changed that story and realized not only might I have been mistaken, but the former story really didn't serve me very well. It did not help me, and it was of no use. So letting go of that first story was very helpful. So I ask, is there something in your life that you'd like to change? Is there something you would prefer would be going better for you? A situation or a relationship or part of your circumstances? As you think about something that you might like to go differently in your life, have you ever said, I have to, about that situation? Or have you ever suggested to others that perhaps you don't have any control over the situation? Anytime we tell a story that puts power outside of ourselves and gives up our own control, it makes us feel powerless. And often these stories blame other people or circumstances, and they kind of get us the same results all the time. They limit our possibilities for the future. There's always something we can do about our situation and our circumstances to make it better for ourselves. We always have a choice. I'm thinking about automatic thoughts and going back to my example of when I thought my relatives didn't care about me or ever want to see me perform things, and that really wasn't true. I could have changed that thought from I have to sit still and be quiet at family gatherings to I choose to learn how to interact in a way that brings joy to everyone at the family gathering and not just to me. I can figure out what would work. In other words, I can change the phrase I have to into I choose to. Again, there's always something about our situation or circumstance that we can control, and choosing instead of letting others be in control in our minds, that gives us a lot more power and it opens up possibilities as well. There's a suggestion I read in a Jack Canfield book that I really like. He suggested changing this phrase, like thinking about the bigger stories we tell about our lives, our workplace, our marriages, our neighborhoods, our parenting, whatever it is, instead of telling the story in a way that is sort of giving up control, adding the phrases I would rather and but instead I choose to complain about, whatever. And I'm going to give you a couple of interesting examples of these. So my first example is, it's really stressful right now. I like to stop snacking at night, but instead I choose to eat whatever I want, whenever I want, and blame my weight gain on the coronavirus pandemic. That's a really revealing and interesting I choose to statement, but saying I choose to eat whatever I want, whenever I want, that is really revealing. It is transparent. I can say to that, if that's my story and I really do want to stop snacking right now, it's pretty obvious that by choosing to eat whatever I want, whenever I want, and blaming weight gain on the pandemic, that it's never going to change. In fact, I'm probably going to gain weight and be miserable. Here's a second example. I never have enough time to enjoy my hobbies or to just relax. I'd like to stop doing so much for other people and doing so much work, but instead I blame my crazy schedule on other people and choose too many commitments. Now, saying that I'm blaming or choosing, that gives me the power, and I can also more clearly see what's really going on and create a new story. Like, what do I really want to do? If I am the person who doesn't enjoy their hobbies, I can choose a new story and then make some different choices. So using this idea that we create our own reality by creating the stories about our past and our current situation, using automatic thoughts, and there's one more step to this that I haven't mentioned. Once we have this story going that gives us the excuse or the blame or the kind of we're stuck in this place, using our automatic thoughts over and over again, what we do next is really quite alarming. I don't know how many of you have thought about this. I never used to until the last few years, but we consciously review evidence to support our automatic thoughts without realizing it. So for example, if I thought that my family never wanted to see me perform ballet, then any chance that I might get, I would look for evidence to support the truth. See, I knew you didn't want to see me dance. Yep, you didn't even want to come, didn't even want to check it out. And I would look for any opportunity to support that story, and then I would keep believing it. One of the reasons I was able to change my story was there was not enough evidence to support that story. In fact, my relatives came to events even when I didn't know they were going to be there. So what kind of evidence can you find that will support a new belief? For example, this idea that we don't have time to enjoy our hobbies or just relax, and we'd like to stop doing so much for other people or doing so much work so we can have that time. If we just look around and we are making too many commitments, we will see that evidence and we will understand we are making the choice. Sure, people are asking us to do things, but we always have a choice whether to say yes or whether to say no. So let's talk about you as we wrap things up today. What are some questions that you might ask yourself to help you change the story of something from your present or something from your past that you're really just holding on to a belief that might not be helping you? Let's start by doing a little bit of brainstorming. First, think about some areas of stress or disappointment, frustration, or complaint that you currently have in your life. This might be your job, your body or fitness level. Maybe it's your spouse, your mother or father, your boss, coworkers, family members, neighbors. Maybe it's a financial situation or something else I haven't mentioned, but come up with something that works for you. And in one sentence, write down the story that you tell yourself about this. For example, I heard one person say, "My job is stressful because my coworkers are always late with projects." I heard a teacher say, "This is a really horrible year because I really just have a tough group of students." Think about your story. What is the story? And once you've got that story formulated, look for anything in that story that is a complaint. It could be something like, "He or she is," "It is," "He or she does," or "They are." Anything that is a complaint is going to be what is justifying your story or keeping you stuck in that story, even if it's true. You could also look at this story for excuses. An excuse would be something like, "It's not as good as it could be because," or "I'm not really doing this because," or "I am doing this because." Anything that justifies the way things are in reality right now, that is an excuse. And once you've looked at the story and any complaints or excuses or even accusations or blame that we have towards other people, the next question to ask yourself, now this one's a tough one for most of us, and it's really going to bust things wide open. This is where the change happens. So you want to slow down and really be open and honest and dig into this question. And that is, what am I doing to create this problem for myself? Or how do I escalate it? And here are some sub-questions that kind of go with this. Am I giving up my control over the situation? Am I giving up my power to other people on purpose? Am I blaming others? Am I making excuses to justify why things are the way they are? Am I avoiding or putting off actions I need to take? As you think about what is your role in the problem, there are two more questions that really help to explore why the problem is the way it is. The first one is, what is the benefit you're getting when things stay this way? For example, if you want to change jobs, but you stay stuck in a job that you don't like, one of the benefits could be that you avoid risk and you also avoid potential failure or looking bad or losing some of your income, or other factors that are beyond your control and they're kind of the unknown. For the present, another benefit might be that you feel in control of things, which is kind of ironic because when we're unhappy about a situation and we give up our control by blaming that situation, strangely, we feel like we're in control of things when we at least keep things as they are. Another benefit you might have in your current situation is that it is safe, reliable, and already here. While the future is unknown if you change, at least the present is known. Also, you're comfortable. If I'm in a situation that I don't like, but I stay there and I choose to stay there, at least I think I don't have to change. I'm okay here. I think other people need to change. So let's talk about the flip side. What is it costing us to keep things the way they are? If we have a problem or a situation we want to change, there's always a cost when we don't change it. The biggest cost is usually feeling stuck, feeling stifled, limiting future possibilities, feeling miserable about something and staying that way. over time. A lot of bad habits will creep in as we try to cope with situations we don't like and which we think are beyond our control. We don't grow. And honestly, lasting happiness and joy are often what we choose to give up when we keep things the way they are in an undesirable situation. As you think about these things, especially the one of how are you contributing to the problem, as well as what does it benefit you and cost you to stay there, go into the new and think, what would you rather be experiencing? If you don't like your marriage, your spouse, your neighborhood, whatever it is, how would you like things to be? If it was ideally as it could be right now, what would that look like for you? Visualize it. See yourself in that future. And what will you do to get it? Once you imagine how you'd like things to be, you have what we call a gap. And that is the space between where you are right now, the undesirable present situation of something, and the possibility in the future, which is definitely better than whatever is happening that you're unhappy about right now. There's usually something hidden, something deeper than just the way things are, that keeps us stuck in the present. Thinking about stories we tell ourselves, what is a story that you tell yourself that might come into play in your present situation? What is the belief you have about yourself? Where did you first come up with that belief? Once you identify this, you can look at the story you're telling yourself, and you can find a new way to tell that story. Just as I gave the example of my little performance experience with family in the living room. Think about that story in your life that you'd like to change. And in closing, a Navy SEAL said at a webinar I attended in April, something really powerful I'd like to share with you. And Navy SEALs have something called a quitter bell. When they're in their Navy SEAL training, if they are giving up, they have to ring the bell to be released and get to leave. And he said this, if your self-talk is self-focused, justifying yourself and living in your suffering, you're walking towards the quitter bell. So it's a good idea to think about things that are within our control or what we do control, the conscious choices in our stories. They can serve us well and help us really make progress towards where we want to go. Thank you for being here for the podcast this week. And here's to being the best version of you. This has been a podcast called Mindset for Life by Bethany at drbcoach.com. To find me on the web, you can visit my blog or my website at www.drbcoach.com. That's drbcoach.com.